said I best stay out of sight. I remember a gun on somebody's blood.
From WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Johannes Werner with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, February 20th. No more rainbow colors on the Ringling Bridge. The Florida Department of Transportation notified the city of Sarasota that the illumination of the bridge is reserved for government holidays only. And on those days, it's red, white, and blue only. This means that organizations that received approval for a special lighting theme by the city this year are now getting notice and an apology. Florida cities rank towards the top nationwide when it comes to residents in financial distress. To highlight where the struggle to pay the bills is most prevalent, financial service company WalletHub released its 2025 report. And that report shows that Florida is the state with most cities in the top 10. Four of them, Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, and Orlando, rank towards the top. The report uses as criteria credit score, people with accounts in distress, bankruptcy filings, and the number of times people in a city use the words debt and loans in internet searches. HUD made more than $250 million available for disaster recovery in Manatee County after last year's devastating storm season. Problem is, at a commission meeting Tuesday, Manatee County officials announced they have already received more than 100 project requests, totaling more than $1 billion since applications opened 3 weeks ago. The applications are coming from Manatee County itself and the five cities within the county, from 29 nonprofits, five community organizations, four businesses, and two faith-based organizations. The proposed projects range from flood prevention, water, sewer, and elevated road projects to $138 million worth of affordable housing. County staff are now reviewing the funding requests and will then present commissioners with a list of requests that comply with all requirements. Governor Ron DeSantis wants to help the federal government with deportations. Yesterday, he signed three additional memos with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement that allows ICE to deputize agents with the Florida State Guard, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and the Florida Department of Agriculture. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, February 20th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Today we're going to be talking about a new proposal for a new performing arts hall to ultimately replace the Van Wezel. This is being proposed, as it has been, by a foundation. The city, it's called the Sarasota Performing Arts Center Foundation. Is that? And Ron Cashton is with me to catch all of my mistakes.
Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Ron. You have been an auditor for the Schubert Theaters in group in New York City. You are very familiar with performing arts halls and their finances. I'd say you're definitely an expert in this arena, no pun intended, right? Your profession is finance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, because part of my career was as a CFO of a multinational hedge fund group. So in addition to the industry experience, I also have experience with financing and financing complex deals.
Okay. So this is second nature for you, and you take a keen interest. As I have to say, what got me started down this path of, well, how did I end up with a radio show? I took a keen interest being both a baseball fan and a history and economics major in school, and just understanding the economics of antitrust law and, you know, public funding of projects, I was looking at stadium funding. And I have to say, it is for, you know, public financing of stadiums. And this was our Ed Smith Stadium. And working, if we're going to do it, the best information we had was that at that time, if it went to a referendum, it would not pass, you know. And so people should be involved. People should know what's happening with their money if it's a good spend. And so to that end, I share your, like, when something hooks you and it doesn't make sense, it's hard to just walk away from that, right?
Yeah, and that's interesting that you bring that up, because I had the same experience. When I first heard about the proposal, being a financial background, I started looking into, well, how are we going to fund it? And is the funding there? And if the funding's not there, what are the implications?
Yeah. And so we're going to walk through, because there was an initial, this goes back to 2014. And the project at that point, Bayfront 2020. And so in 2014, I think they chose the name Bayfront 2020 with the intention of a park being completed at basically taking the Van Wezel parking lot and converting it to park space.
Right.
Which really makes total sense. It is not the highest and best use of waterfront property to have a parking lot there.
Sure.
I think everybody agrees.
I think everybody agrees. And that was really the impetus for the whole Bay Park project. A.G. Lafley has done a great job on phase one and is working on phase two. Mm-hmm. But everybody knows the heart of it is that parking lot. You know, how do we improve the land?
And I write about this in my Substack blog, The Purple Elephant in the Room. I believe that's the name of it. So there was in the beginning, just a picture, just a schematic of a performing arts hall. And it's interesting because the picture includes the existing Van Wezel. And there was smack in the middle of the park, big performing arts hall. No pictures about parking. So they got rid of the parking lot. This is a 2014, or by that time, I guess it was 2015 or 2016, concept design. And there is no parking. And now, over the years, the city has entered into an agreement that for public advocates like yourself and me, who we look at this and go, this is a bad deal for the city, right?
Yep. And the agreement itself was odd in that you usually try and relate any legal document to types of documents you're used to. So you either have a contract, you know, you're doing a business deal. There's some similarity that you can refer to. And this particular agreement was odd in that they referred to it as a preliminary agreement. It's not the implementation agreement. That's coming up for deliberation in March.
It's March 3rd.
You know, that was the original date, and I have a feeling it's going to be pushed back.
Okay.
We're still waiting for the agenda to come out, but it's going to be, it sounds like, sometime in March.
Okay. So this, it's interesting. So talk a little bit about parallels, because back in 2010, when there was a memorandum of, or actually it was 2009, I believe. Anyway, that time frame. There was a memorandum of understanding that between the city and the Orioles, or the county, and the Orioles, and supposedly there was going to be an actual contract, and it never came. They deliberately chose a weaker type preliminary contract and never did really update it, kept it under wraps for the public didn't see it in any amount of time to really respond to it. So, you know, having seen this before, same kind of show on a different channel, I took an interest, and you have, because there is now, the foundation is different. We have a new director of the foundation who seems quite lovely. I've met with her. She's very experienced, very professional. Okay. But there's a new proposal. There's going to be a new contract. So let's kind of walk through what you've seen, because there are things with the prior proposal that which the city agreed to, which I think was a very one-sided deal for the city. Like they're all, the city was on the hook for quite a bit and the foundation not so much.
Yeah, and the city gave the foundation certain rights, or the foundation may look at it as obligations. That seems strange. For instance, in this preliminary agreement, whatever you would call it, it said that the foundation would run the new hall. Yet currently, the city's running the Van Wezel. So the question is, right then and there, when the city was signing the contract, they were signing it with an organization that had no experience running some type, you know, performance venue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to their credit, the foundation has hired somebody who has vast experience.
Yep.
But yeah, so let's talk about this new proposal, because we're going from this idea of just putting a huge building in the middle of a new park, which was never actually viable for parking reasons, and also because it would block the view of people across the street who actually have an agreement with the city that that cannot be done.
Right.
Yeah.
When the condos across from the Bay Park were being built, you know, the Renaissance and some of the others,
Alinari,
they signed an agreement with the city that's known as a view corridor easement, meaning that there would be no building that would block their view above a certain height onto the bay. Mm-hmm. And that puts a lot of restrictions on any design of any tall structure.
Which is frankly, I find it very counterproductive that the city would have gone ahead and have a schematic drawn that it was used over and over again to show the public what could be, what they were intending, that on its face couldn't be built because it violated the corridor view. And so this is the kind of conundrum, or like, can't we preemptively get something that's actually a working, you know, a working document. It's very frustrating for me that these things happen. So living in the city. So let's have a look, because Ron, you have put together a very clear, succinct, but detailed analysis of a new proposal. And recently, I think it was earlier this year, a new architect was hired, Renzo Piano, and he initially designed three buildings at 10th Street across from Publix, where the boat ramp is. They've moved it from the middle of the parking lot now off to the side, and these were lower buildings. One of them was suspended over the boat ramp canal, which I was like, what are you doing? And of course, we've just had these storms. And so it's like, all right, now they're only proposing two buildings.
Right.
Okay. And so you've done this analysis, and is there still a building suspended over the canal?
Yep. They still have one that is the multipurpose room as well as some type of atrium for people to go in.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, and you said they recommended four new buildings.
They originally had four, and then they trimmed it down to three. And I think right now, just for financial and to make a complex proposal somewhat simpler, they've eliminated what the foundation was calling the medium theater. So right now there's just a large theater and the multi-purpose room.
Suspended over the canal, yep. The water. Okay. So according to the Performing Arts Foundation, this two-building concept will cost $407 million. Half is sourced from philanthropy and half from government funding. So if you live in the city or potentially this could impact county residents if the county funds it, which I think, honestly, the county, if we're going to build something, a performing arts hall that serves the whole county, that makes sense. But it's half from charitable donations,
right,
and half from government funding. And right off the bat, that amount of money, over $200 million, which we know will probably be more with any building project, that's a lot of money.
Well, and that is just the money for the construction of the two buildings. It doesn't include many of the other city obligations. The large numbers being parking. The city is obligated to build parking sufficient enough to support these buildings, as well as the Van Wezel, as well as the mm-hmm. other halls, you know, municipal auditorium, and fund it, because that's just the construction cost. That's the check you need to write to the builders to construct the building. So, of course, you know, anyone that takes out a mortgage knows you have how much you paid for your house and then the interest you're going to owe.
Right.
And the interest is significant.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You've had a look at what a bond issue would cost the city. Obviously, over time, is this an analysis for how long? How many years?
For 30 years.
30 years. So you've got all these other obligations. And a parking garage, I don't know, are they... They're expensive.
They are. It's one of those that in the foundation's proposal that they gave to the workshop for the city commission, they were talking about $30 million, but only included construction for part of their needs. To fully fund all of their needs, it'd be around $50 million.
For parking.
For parking. So that's separate from the $203 million. Mm-hmm. You're adding another $50 million. Now, some of the commissioners brought up the fact that the foundation's proposal includes utilizing some of State Street and Palm Avenue's garages. And some of the city commissioners thought that might be unrealistic because we're potentially reducing parking on Main Street.
Right.
So can you really count those spots? And are you harming downtown merchants?
Well, and it's not close. I mean, if people are, usually people could be dressed up, you know, going to a show or they're not going to be walking from a downtown parking garage out to a new performing arts hall on the water at 10th Street. That's at least a half mile.
Oh, sure. It would have to be shuttle buses. They'd have to set up some type of system. And going to your event using shuttle buses is one experience. Waiting for shuttle buses to come back after the event's over and everybody's looking for a bus.
Yeah,
you know, you're going to have a different experience than what you currently have now with the Van Wezel.
Yeah, and one of the things, the Sarasota Orchestra has plans, you know, to move to Cattleman and Fruitville near I-75. And these proposals, there's a kind of chic factor that patrons of, and I'm talking like regular patrons of these venues, and these are the same folks who'll donate to them, who live on Longboat, who live on Bird Key, or, you know, downtown Sarasota condos, waterfront condos, and they're very active in this project. But there's a certain like chic factor that is getting on a shuttle, I don't know. You know, we'll talk about that later. But, you know, or is putting a symphony hall, and I'm switching over, I know, but that may come up later in our conversation. you know, do you go to dinner at UTC Mall and then go to your symphony concert at Fruitvale and Cattleman? It's a little different than a beautiful venue in downtown Sarasota where you're, you can walk from a restaurant like to the opera. Okay, so let's look at this borrowing for 30 years and how much that's going to cost the city. You've broken it down with a $203 million outlay, $203.5 million, and the interest. And what would the interest rate be?
Well, the interest varies from, well, backing up a bit.
Okay.
Trying to get a good model for what the bond would look like, what the financing would look like for a building like this, I went to our recent financing, the bonding of the Bay Park Phase 2.
Okay.
And the Bay Park Phase 2 had a series of bonds trying to keep the interest rate low. Some of the, you know, imagine like a bundle of different bonds. Some expire sooner, others expire later. But because the duration changes, it goes from 2.5% to 4.2%. So that's what the Bay Park has.
That's pretty low.
It's pretty low. So this may be overly optimistic, but using that as a model, if you wanted to have a bond for $203 million, it would cost you roughly $156 million.
In interest.
So that's
assuming
separate.
The interest stays between 2.5 and 4.
Exactly.
Which is very optimistic.
Right, right. And that, you know, the Bay Park bond was also a much smaller bond. You know, as you get bigger bonds, sometimes you have to entice investors. But let's say that we have the same, you know, the same interest and the same interest rates. Again, being optimistic. It was heartening to hear during the workshop that the city's own financing department, Kelly Strickland, came in with an estimate of $160 million.
Just about the same as yours.
Just about the same. Mm-hmm. So when you look at, again, separating parking from all of this, which is a very large number in itself, you're talking $203.5 million construction and another $160 in financing. That someone, the city will have to pay cash to satisfy that. So, so someone's got to write a check.
This is a $500 million project.
Yeah.
Bottom line. Okay. Now, if we look at government funding sources, because one of the things that's uncomfortable for me when I look at this is the lack of funding from the philanthropy side. You're putting, and the way these agreements have been, the one agreement has been written, but then what I would anticipate and be concerned about another agreement is that they're very locked down when it comes to the city's obligations and not at all locked down when it comes to philanthropy, when it comes to the foundation. You know, my concern is these agreements tend to be extremely one-sided. What do you think of that?
Well, and that's a very interesting point because I agree with you when you start looking at the legal obligations, and I was focusing more on the financial obligations. But if you look at the contract with Renzo Piano, the contract with Renzo Piano was made.
The architect.
Sorry, is the architect that the foundation and the city hired. But in fact, it was the city exclusively that hired Renzo Piano. And the contract goes out of its way to say, although throughout the contract they talk about the foundation, the two legal parties at the end of the day is the city of Sarasota and Renzo Piano design design firm.
And he's very well known and very competent in exactly this kind of design. And his fee, I had Bill Waddill on the show, and people can listen. I would encourage people to listen to both Bill and you.
Absolutely.
To get a full idea. The fee for Mr. Piano's services is total, like under 40,
Right, it's $36.9.
$36.9 million, which is about 10% of the cost of the project. And Bill was assuring me, like, that's a normal fee. It sounds like a heck of a lot for something that we haven't really nailed down yet, you know,
yep.
how we're going to pay for it. So tell me about bonds that are backed by TIF money, tax increment financing.
Right.
So for somebody who's never heard of TIF, what is it and why is it a useful financing tool?
Sure. Here? Sure. And the whole concept of TIF goes back to if you're some type of government entity and you're trying to do some improvements, either build some municipal building or improve the land, many times that will help the property values around the project. So the idea is to take the property tax appreciation, the increases in property taxes that such a project would come by, and use it as the funding source for the project. Therefore, the people that gain the benefit are the people that pay for it.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting about this particular project is, so it's a TIF just like I described, except its property earmark is the quay. And the base year that they took for showing what the increases are above that is when there was no construction on the quay.
So for people who are listening, who maybe you don't know what we mean by the quay, where Fruitville Road dumps out onto 41, the end of Fruitville near the water, that used to be when I moved here in 1999, we called it the quay. It's still called the quay. And there were buildings there. That particular development ultimately failed and the buildings were knocked down. And it had been an empty field for over probably a decade at least. And now where you've got the Westin all the way up to the Garden Club,
right.
And at that area where Fruitville meets 41, all those new buildings, all like the new Ritz building, Beso, there's an Ocean Prime Steakhouse that just opened in this other building. One Park is a development there. So this new set of condos is definitely contributing to that increase in value.
Right. And as it turns out that particular piece of land, and thank you for
yeah, people need the visual,
yep,
right?
Yep. Because it goes from really the west side of Tamiami Trail from Fruitville to Boulevard of the Arts. You know,
okay.
that
it's really
area
that. So it's not
is,
the Westin, actually. It doesn't have the corner.
Right.
Okay.
It doesn't have the corner.
Okay.
But that turns out to be one of the most valuable pieces of property in the entire city. In fact, it's probably maybe the most valuable piece of property in all of the county. The TIF amounts to, when you try and put it in terms of the taxable base, the taxable property base of the entire city, it's around 8%.
Okay, so it's 8% of the city's tax base are those new buildings, and some of them haven't even been built yet.
Right.
Between the Garden Club and Fruitville and 41. And these are, that tax base is what they're tapping with tax increment financing. That's what TIF means.
Right.
The increase in value, and then a piece of that is supposed to pay for these buildings, or is it the total increase in value? Like all
it's the total increase,
okay.
But because you began with vacant land, all the buildings themselves, all the value of the buildings themselves become the appreciation.
Okay.
And so both the city and the county viewed that TIF as their piggy bank for both the Bay Park and any capital improvements for any of the buildings within the Bay Park.
So the county has to be on board, don't they?
Well, half the value of the TIF is controlled by the county.
Okay, because, and half by this city.
Right.
Okay. Yes. So let me ask you, do we need the total value for this plan? Are they relying on the total, all of the TIF money to fund?
Well, and that's very interesting. When this project got to the point when the architect, when Renzo Piano was hired, the foundation in the city went to an advisory board. Half of it is comprised of city commissioners and half comprised of county commissioners. And they asked for a recommendation to fund the design fee of the architect. When they did that, the county disagreed and refused to recommend it. They thought that the project was beyond the scale of what they expected. And what's interesting about that is when the TIF began, the estimate was it was a value of around $200 million. So the county thought they were going to put in $100 million and the city thought they were going to put in $100 million. That was grossly underestimated. It turns out that the TIF is closer to $500 million worth of value. Mm. When the county found out about the revised estimates, the county commissioners said that was not their expectation. That's not what they had planned to reserve for the park. And they instructed the county manager to start looking into ways to terminate the TIF as soon as possible.
So what you're telling me, let me make sure I'm clear. The county thought that they were putting $100 million in,
right,
if they agreed.
All in.
And then they realized it's really $500 million, not $100 million. And the county is looking to fund, and frankly, because the county builds sprawl that doesn't generate enough tax revenue to pay for the infrastructure it requires, and we see the problems everywhere, the county's going to be hard-pressed to turn all of that TIF money over to funding this.
Right.
Project.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the question comes into, you know, were they approving a certain amount of taxes or were they, you know, funding an unlimited amount?
Like a blank check.
Right.
Okay. All right. So So the government funding is this TIF money, which is unclear that the county will be on board. They've already indicated that they're not going to be fully on board. Ticket surcharges, a penny sale tax, state and federal grants. It's far from nailed down, right, what the government funding is. But there's going to be an agreement to come before the city commission in March that will lock down the city's obligations.
Yep.
And without actually locking down the city's dependent on the county, they're not going to the county with this agreement. They're going to the city.
Right.
Okay.
It will still be a city obligation.
Okay. Which brings up for me you don't want to put the city in a vulnerable position where down the line they're going to be on the hook for things that we can't fund or we don't have the county as a partner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they had a workshop a couple of weeks ago, the city commission did, where the foundation presented their latest proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone agreed that the city had a shortfall of around $70 million. So there was, in the proposal, $70 million that the city had no idea. Both the city and the foundation had no idea where that would come from, but the city would need that. And then what even I found
more concerning,
was that didn't include the financing. So that $70 million that no one knows where the city is going to get that money from doesn't include another $160 million that everyone knows will be an obligation the city will have to pay.
Yeah. Everybody, if you're just joining us, my guest is Ron Cashton, and we are talking about the nuts and bolts of funding a new performing arts hall. Ron's done a thorough analysis, and so we're going to continue to go through that. You're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Turning the page here, let's take a look at the philanthropy. This is the foundation,
yep,
right? And it has been, in my view, since 2014, or since it became like a public effort to create a new performing arts hall. You know, I was in sales and marketing, and what I see, and I don't know that this is going to change, and I hope it does, but that the game was to trash the Van Wezel as outdated, as some kind of has-been venue, when the reality is the Van Wezel wins awards, and whatever happens, we are going, whether we build something new on the Bayfront somewhere else or not, we're going to need the Van Wezel, I would say, for at least a decade.
At the very least, even if this all gets approved.
Even if it all gets approved and the funding is found. So it's been, I think, really bad form I'm hoping the new foundation will stop that. But this new foundation has a pretty big nut to crack to bring over $200 million. And I would think, frankly, they also should deliver on some of the parking obligation as well. But I don't see the city thinking that way yet. But tell us about the competing environment, because there's a lot of big initiatives that are looking for philanthropy, right? Yep. They're not operating in a vacuum, and they haven't come with a whole ton of money. How much? I mean, the last I heard was they had $20 million of the $200.
That's all that I've seen announced so far, and that's okay, over several years. And
since over 10 years ago.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And it's interesting that you brought up that point. For a time, I lived in New York, and it was an interesting time in the city, because the same idea of a historic building having some type of expiration date occurred with Grand Central Station.
Oh, yeah.
It occurred with Carnegie Hall, and it even included Lincoln Center. All three of them, the city was considering, maybe the time is up and we need to tear them down and, you know, build something new.
That was a famous Grand Central Station. Jackie Kennedy Onassis said, no.
Yep.
Yeah. And the Van Wezel does have a historic pedigree. When it was built, frankly, by the same kind of folks who want something new now, it was a different time. The community was extremely proud of the venue.
Yes.
And it was, it has a connection to Frank Lloyd Wright's former studio, or, you know, he had passed, but let's talk about the funding for philanthropy and why it's going to be challenging for them.
Because there are a lot of non-for-profits doing very ambitious projects right now, which is great. You know, it's wonderful to see the city thrive. But right now, the foundation's going to have to compete with Sarasota Orchestra.
Uh-huh.
They're going to have to compete with Moat, who's still looking for the remaining funding for their sea aquarium. Mm-hmm. Selby Gardens continues on. They're about to do phase two.
They're looking for $60.9 million for phase two.
Yep.
Looking for $130 million, which, right. You know, we understand they don't have it all. The orchestra, we don't know.
We don't know.
Okay. But it's going to be around the same amount as
What was interesting about the orchestra, so the orchestra just got around $50 million. And they said, you know, this was one of the second largest grants that a performance center got.
In Florida?
In the nation. They were going back to what David Geffen gave for Avery Fisher Hall. And they say, you know, $50 million, a sum that is extraordinary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then Ringling College is going to build their signature building.
Yep.
At 25th and
yes.
41. The Bay Future Phases for yep. the park is going to be about $55 million. I'm reading from your analysis.
Right.
Florida Studio Theater, $57 million. This is a lot of money for many different projects. And so it can be challenging for the Performing Arts Hall to raise $203 million in this environment. What I find striking is that the requirements in the past anyway have been so weak for the Performing Arts Foundation to actually demonstrate that they've raised money. Now, I understand donors may want the comfort of seeing that the city is on board, but, you know, that delegate balance is really where the rubber meets the road. It may not be so easy for them to raise that kind of money, right?
And it is telling that the orchestra, even without finalized architectural plans, even preliminary architectural plans, was able to get significant donations.
Yeah, that is important. It is not like, and you know, the thing about it, one of the major things that has changed is that there used to be something of a cooperation between the Van Wezel and the orchestra. And that changed. And in 2020, there was a renovation done of the Van Wezel to allow it to have these a flyover capacity for Broadway shows like
yep.
Phantom of the Opera. And it changed the acoustics.
Yes. Yes. They had to, because the sets started becoming more complex, they had to make the stage taller.
I don't know if they had to.
That's,
you know, honestly, because there's a mentality. So we're now want to talk about competing with Tampa.
Yeah.
But for my interest is, you did this renovation in 2020. It actually created problems for the orchestra where the music didn't, you know, they were unhappy, right?
Right.
It just didn't sound the same. How many shows actually need this capacity, number one? Do you actually think these shows are going to come to Sarasota instead of Tampa, number two? I don't think that's true. And so what's the thinking at the helm? Did it really make sense to begin with? And how did you not know that you were going to ruin the acoustics? Like, because they created this big cavity in the ceiling for
right.
these equipment and all. How do you not know that you're messing with something? And this is part of what is...
And that's part of what drove the orchestra. What is interesting, when you get into competition, and the renovation was actually in 2000.
Oh, God, so I'm sorry, it's not 2020.
But,
yeah.
You know, when you talk about competition, you know, we've been talking about the building itself, not the actual operations. And that's very, very interesting, because the biggest customer of the Van Wezel right now is the orchestra. And you're going from a customer to a competitor, because the orchestra, you know, if they go along the path that they're going on now,
uh-huh.
is going to have a competing venue. So where you would have, you know, a customer filling your seats, you're having a customer competing against the same patron that you're trying.
So for the same market, you're actually creating more options, but that can mean that you're seating, that you're not going to have as many customers on any given night because some of them are at a different venue watching something else.
Right.
So this brings us to blackouts in any performance art halls. When they sign, you know, I'm going to use Taylor Swift. If Tampa were to sign, it's not the best example. Well, if Tampa were to sign Michael Bublé and have Michael Bublé, and he's been in both. But if he signs to appear at the Straz has a blackout clause where Michael Bublé cannot appear within a 90-mile radius for a certain amount of time. So this and this performing arts hall that they want to build has seating to compete with Tampa. But we don't have the market to compete with Tampa.
Yep. And another good example someone else has brought to it is speaking of sporting events, that football, the NFL, you'll notice that if you want to watch a Bucks game, you can see it when they're playing in Tampa. And the reason why is Tampa's trying to fill the stadium.
Yeah.
So it's really along the same lines that they don't want to cannibalize. If they can force people to drive and fill a venue, they'll do it.
Right.
And that brings to a great point that Tampa, even if we build a venue of equal size to the Straz, and that's what's currently being proposed.
That's what they want to do, yeah.
Tampa's population is much larger than the Sarasota region.
Yeah.
You know, what
our metropolitan area is smaller than the Tampa metropolitan area.
Significantly smaller.
So this idea, and it has been a talking point for why we need a performing arts hall. Well, we need to attract these different shows. Well, the problem with that is Tampa's going to get them first.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter how big your venue is because you can't change your market, and the market in Tampa is bigger.
Yep.
And it would be great because it would be great if these things were simply acknowledged and proactively dealt with. But for the first 10 years, these folks didn't even have a business plan.
Yeah.
You know? So the dynamics of this in terms of what has gone on and how, like the PR stuff, it's been very disappointing to watch the attitudes of some people in the foundation, very dismissive, really rude to, I think, people like yourself who are bringing forward legitimate, grounded objections and, hey, what about this? Hey, what about that?
That is a great point. And we were discussing this prior to the show of rather than coming up with opposing facts, it tends to go down to name calling, which is odd. But getting to
there's one quote where someone on the foundation, and this, I believe, was the meeting where the first agreement, which was really concerning in how it made the city responsible for so much. And he referred to the citizens who were expressing concern that the whole thing was kabuki theater.
Yeah.
Which is a term, basically a sham, like, so, which suggests to me that he knew the fix was in and this was just performative. What an attitude, very unprofessional attitude.
Yep.
Like they don't have any obligation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because my analysis, I keep on trying to go back to the experts, going back to the facts and talking about the blackouts. I'd love to do a quick quote from Mary Benzel, who's the director of the Van Wezel, and she does a wonderful job at booking events.
She does.
And she talks about the blackouts and what the Straz, which is the Tampa Theater, has done, you know, made her life more difficult. And she wrote, as we started to do better, meaning Van Wezel started to do better, they Tampa blocked us in the same year, and we would get the show the next year because she was more focused on Broadway touring companies. Mm-hmm. As we got even stronger, they not only blocked us, but asked for a repeat second play before we got to the play. So therefore, we wouldn't have the show for 2 years in a row. And so that gets back to the economics of it. So even if we build a new, shiny, larger theater, Tampa still has that clout and that power because they have a larger population. They have a larger audience.
Yeah. To which, you know, if you don't have a business plan, so there's something, it's a very basic thing, a SWOT analysis in business, where you put down, it's like you do a four-box grid, your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and your threats. And what I would say to the foundation is, when you were doing your update for these Broadway shows, okay, with the idea of that you would be able to attract them, how in the world could you not anticipate, being in this industry and understanding that blackout clauses exist, did you really think that the Stras Center wouldn't respond with right. blackout clauses? Why in the world didn't you do an analysis that this was a threat? And it's, hey, it's not personal, it's business, right?
Yep.
They're, to quote, they're going to the mattresses, which is what they're going to do.
Yep.
How and do you not know they're going to do that?
Right, exactly. You know, go through the proposal, but be clear-eyed about it. You know,
right.
when we get back
you're
to...
You're not operating in a vacuum.
Exactly. And, you know, when we talk about the deficit, some of the listeners, you know, I'm sure that they're going to the place that I ultimately went to. Well, if the city has a deficit, they have the capability of funding any deficit. They can just raise property taxes. So they can do that. The commission can vote and say, you know what, we're yeah. going to raise property taxes. And I did a quick analysis of that. And if the city wanted to fund the deficit that we currently know, so these, exactly what you say, a project this large, it'll probably have cost overruns, but yeah. let's say we're exceptional and there are no cost overruns.
Which never happens, but okay.
Property taxes for the city would have to raise by 24% over the next 30 years. Mm. Now, the city residents can get together and say, this is so important to us that we want to set aside resiliency and some of the other funding needs, and we're fine with raising property taxes. But
you mean when you say resiliency, we're talking about hardening areas that flood.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
And some
yeah.
of the other storm problems that we experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we do it, you know, with open eyes and we know what we're going into and we know what the implications are, then fine. But we should discuss that while we're discussing a legal obligation, which is what's going to be deliberated in March.
Okay. There's still a ton more stuff to get to, and we don't have too much time. You've done an analysis of how many tickets would have to be sold compared to what is sold right now.
Right.
And you come to the conclusion that to really fund this, they have to sell three times the number of tickets?
Right. Right now, and that's what the foundation's projections are going. That's
okay.
their operational model. They're anticipating that they're going to sell three times the number of tickets that's currently sold in the Van Wezel. And what makes that...
And they're going to have 100 more shows.
Yes.
I don't even know how you... So it's going
right.
to... Okay.
And it's going to have 100 more shows that don't include the orchestra, because remember, the orchestra is going to have a competing hall that they're going to try and get the same patrons.
So right
and,
now, they
oh,
have 78. I just wanted
yes.
78 shows, and they're talking about the new hall would have 179 shows, and you're saying, and that's with the attrition of the orchestra being gone.
Right.
Okay.
And right now, the current thought is we're going to keep events going to the Van Wezel. So the new hall will have to have three times the number of tickets and compete with the Van Wezel and the new orchestra arts music center.
And the so the Van Wezel if it's going to still be there, there's a big question of what are they going to be doing. And the thing is, regardless of what happens with a new performing arts hall, and I think we've got a building on the water, and we've got the storm, you know, the Gulf is hotter now. We've experienced some really troubling storms. The conditions indicate this isn't going to change. There's two things. One is, and whatever is built, when it is built, it is going to be 10 years away. It's not going to happen overnight. We need the Van Wezel to function. But does it even make sense to build something on the water?
Yes, and it's literally on the water, and you're right about the time.
Over the canal.
Over the canal. It's going to need approval by the Army Corps of Engineers.
And I love Bill Waddell. As I said to him, you're my favorite person to disagree with, you know, who's advocating. He's like, he's really very reassuring. No, we can do it. We can do it. But my question was, just because we can, does that mean we should? There are places where we could build something that aren't on the water. Yeah. Right?
One of the aspects that everyone, I think, loved about Bay Park when it was originally conceived was the Sunset Pier. Remember that semicircle? Well, it'd be wonderful to have AG on the show just talking about him and the discussions that the Bay Park Conservancy has and still going with the Army Corps of Engineers trying to get that pier built.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal. But again, maybe we just need to respect the shoreline and understand, let it be a shoreline.
Yes.
You know, that might be the very best thing for our community. So there's an engineering report. The first engineering report when the city commission was deciding about an agreement was actually not in the packet. It was not provided to the city commission, which I think was just an egregious, outrageous thing to do. There's another, Karen's is the company engineering report, which shows that we can adapt the Van Wezel in a cost-effective manner to our new storm reality.
Yep. And that is really interesting that you brought that up. It was the county commissioner, Mark Smith, when he was running initially, he brought up there should be an engineering report on the Van Wezel. And only at that time did then city manager Marlon Brown produce a report that he had commissioned but had told no one about.
And he already had it. And we
had
paid
it.
For that.
Yes.
We paid for it, which is unbelievable.
Yes. But the new David Karen's report is actually wonderful, and it goes into all aspects of the Van Wezel Hall and talks about what you can do immediately to just make it more resilient so it wouldn't have had the damage that it just occurred with Milton.
Yes. And the city commission actually declined to insure it, which I don't know how you do that when you know you're going to need a venue for the next decade, really. How do you just decide not to insure it? I think it's nuts. That's me. I think that was a crazy decision, and we need a lot more grounded thinking about what's happening. And I include your analysis is grounded thinking.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we are almost at the end. Ron, real quickly, you put forth other areas where we could build a performing arts hall that aren't vulnerable to the storm surge. Tell me quickly what those are.
Yeah, there's one idea of trying to put a music hall similar to what the orchestra is trying to do on the bay, or what I find more exciting is to use the land that the city has purchased downtown right next to City Hall, which would fit a music center like the Boston Symphony Hall. So world-renowned hall could go in that lot right next to City Hall downtown.
Which would mean you could build another parking. You already have Palm Avenue and State Street garage within walking distance. You could find another place to put another parking garage within walking distance that wouldn't be totally dedicated to just one use, you know.
Right.
There are and we need to wrap up. There are many possibilities.
And it's just that, you know, if we're going down an unproductive path, you know, there's better approaches that we can have for everybody.
Yeah. So everybody, I thank you so much for listening. And I thank you, Ron Kasdan. It's an amazing piece of work that you put together, very professional, because this is your profession. So I appreciate the work you're doing for the public. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Of Democracy Now!, you're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
My name is Chris Doles. I'm here because I'm a federal worker. I'm the president of my local, IFPT Local 98, and I'm also one of the national coordinators with the Federal Unionist Network that put out a call for today's day of action in cities all over the country to stand up to the assault on the civil service.
As thousands rally against the purge underway by President Trump and Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, we'll get an update and speak with Quinn Slobidian, author of Crack Up Capitalism, about Musk's push to speed up the breakdown of the government.
I think we're seeing with DOGE right now is kind of the convergence of three sorts of forms of politics that have never been this close to power before. One is more familiar. It's kind of cost cutting, productivity, efficiency, treat the government like a business or like an asset to be stripped. Two is the more Christian conservative model of Project 2025 and the idea that you need to remove the government from certain parts of social life altogether. And the third is the more extreme version, which you could think of as a kind of right-wing accelerationism.
Then to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the United Nations is accusing Rwanda-backed M23 fighters of killing children, attacking hospitals and warehouses storing humanitarian aid.
In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Congo...